Hello and welcome to Inside Jonas. My name is Thilo Hertel and today I have a new co-host at my side, my colleague Simone Catania.
Hello everyone, nice to be here and co-hosting today. Today we are at the Internet X Domain Summit in Frankfurt, Germany. We are talking to some interesting guests, including Chris Mundini from ICANN, Paulina Malaya from Centre,
Abe Story from Entry, and Steven Yan from Sectico, who will be explaining various aspects of the domain business. Keywords here are digital sovereignty, the new GTLD program, SSL encryption, and other domain innovations.
So, enjoy this special domain episode from the InternetX Domain Summit. Let's start with one of the most exciting developments in the Internet. ICANN's new GTLD program set to launch in 2026. But what does this program mean for the Internet and how will it impact us in the future? To help us explore these questions, we invited Chris Mundini, Managing Director for Europe at ICANN. Chris is a leading voice in shaping the policy and programs that influence how we interact with the Internet globally. Chris, could you please walk us through the process for the new GTLD program? How will interested parties be able to apply and what does the timeline look like from application to delegation in this 2026 round?
Thank you so much for having me, and thanks so much for the question. I'm delighted by all of the assistance getting the word out about this program, which, as you say, will reshape the internet in the coming months and years. To back up a little bit and explain what ICANN's role is, we administer all of the domain names and IP addresses, the numeric addresses, all of the internet's addressing systems worldwide. And we've been doing it for over 20 years as a global nonprofit working in the public interest. And if you consider that we have 5.5 billion people using the internet and tens of billions of devices all using this addressing system, it's a pretty big task. The other thing that we do is we gather a community of people that make policies for these domain names and other addressing systems, whether they're security or protocols or other innovations. And new GTLDs are indeed one of those innovations. And the last time there was an expansion in the new GTLD space was in 2012. So it's been quite a while. And the internet has changed a lot, and the program has changed a lot with a lot of new innovations for communities, for geographies like cities and regions, for brands and companies, but also many of the exciting innovators that are attending conferences all around us now, promoting new ways to use them. So starting in April of next year, we'll open an application window for those that would like to operate an internet registry, a new GTLD, and they will in fact be operating a part of this global expanding interoperable internet.
So if I have a creative idea for a new top-level domain, can I just apply or what do I need to provide?
So what's interesting is, you know, a lot of people and a lot of organizations think, well, should I apply for a new GTLD? And what most of us are familiar with is how to register a domain name at the second level for our website. And that's a pretty easy thing to do. You can do that on your own at home and pay a minimal amount just to operate it. And even small companies do that, and big companies do it that way at tremendous scale. To apply for a new GTLD, you need to be an organization, and you need to have technical competence and resources to actually run a domain name registry. Think of it more like it may not just be a shop selling something in a store window. It's more like the factory that provides all of the things that all of the shops sell. So it's a much larger scale. If you have a good idea, by all means, and you're part of an organization, because you can't do it as an individual, you could determine what category you fall into. Maybe you're part of a community and you want to build space online for that community and sell or register domain names for members of that community. Or you might be doing it on behalf of your home city or region. Or you might be working for a big company or a small company and want your brand after the dot for all kinds of things, for your partners to take more of your digital infrastructure in-house. The application window opens in April of 2026, but really you need to be preparing now. I would say that there's an applicant guidebook that's actually been published. It's been out for public comment by that community that I mentioned, and it's in its last phase, and it'll be a final publication of the rule book will be in the autumn of this year, but already you can read the version that's out now. It won't change very much. And it explains the fees, it explains the categories, it explains the documentation you'll need. And also crucially, you'll have to show that you have the technical competence, the equipment, the personnel to run an internet registry.
And is there a maximum of numbers of new GTLDs that will be in this round? So,
from the point of view of our colleagues that have looked at the security, stability, and the resilience of the internet, we've asked them how many GTLDs is too many GTLDs. And at this stage, every application will be reviewed very carefully to see how it might interact or work or affect the security, stability, or resilience. But at this stage, from the point of view of what's possible, there should not be a limit. So don't worry about it. We'll let you know if we get to that number.
What are some of the key changes or improvements that applicants can expect in the upcoming GTLD round compared to the previous one?
Well, I'm really glad that you asked that, because the global community of volunteers that set all of the ICANN policies have really asked us to put an emphasis on diversity and global inclusion. So a couple of the improvements are in areas like what are called internationalized domain names. And these are domain names in different alphabets, basically different scripts that are Mandarin, Cyrillic, Arabic, many, many. There are over 24, because up until recently, internet navigators needed to use a www dot, which didn't exist in many, many alphabets. So that's one really great improvement. Another one to promote inclusion is something called the Applicant Support Program. For nonprofits or IGOs or charitable organizations or micro enterprises in the developing world. And we are offering financial and non-financial support to help them get involved. In terms of some of the rules and the way that we're running the program, we actually now have a pre-approval process for registry service back-end providers. So already some of these RSPs with whom an applicant can outsource to run the technical part of their registry, they're going onto a list. So you can choose a partner and go make your application next year together with them. And then there are other, I would say, procedural improvements, like reducing the incidence of contention between strings that are applied for by two different parties and ways to resolve them, for example.
And is ICANN also addressing concerns surrounding DNS abuse and ensuring the new GTLD program will foster a secure and stable internet?
Well, alongside everything that we're doing in the Next Round program, we continue to work on several projects with technical partners to identify and reduce and mitigate abuse. As you know, we implement these innovations and policies through contracts with registries and registrars, and those have recently been upgraded with amendments to make fighting abuse easier. And also, for the new round itself, there are many, many requirements about future registry operators to take steps to mitigate abuse in their own top-level domains. The record of many of these domains is that the abuse declines because you are controlling your registry, your domain yourself. And in fact, I have to say that the importance of using all of the abuse mechanisms, rights protection mechanisms, and other mechanisms that exist are working in parallel to the rollout of this new program. So it's something that our community and we as an organization are very focused on.
More and more countries and organizations are discussing digital sovereignty. What role do domains play in this context? And can TLDs also be a piece of digital independence? What is your opinion or your view as part of global organization just like ICANN?
It's a super interesting question, and I have to say, you know, we hear this buzzword of sovereignty and digital sovereignty again and again, but it's not very well defined. And I thought that your use of the term digital independence was also very interesting. In part, if you're applying to operate your own GTLD registry, you are bringing a part of your digital infrastructure in-house and having more control over the policies and the users and the people that can interact with your registry. So that is a form, I would say, of independence. I wouldn't put too much emphasis on a geopolitical advantage. I talk to governments all the time about how they can make their internet more resilient and available and accessible for their citizens. And we, in turn, explain ICANN's global role of providing consumer choice, competition in the domain name sector, and so forth. But certainly, there is an added degree of control for a registry operator over their digital assets. And if that helps them feel better about navigating what the current context in the world is, then by all means they should consider making an application.
It was a pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now we delve into the intersection of policy and the domain industry. We are glad to be joined by Polina Malaya, Policy Director at CENTER, the Association of European Code Top-Level Domain Registry. Polina, thank you for being here and sharing your expertise with us. Let's start with an exciting experiment. Imagine you could rewrite the internet rules for Europe tomorrow. As someone familiar with policy, governance, and the domain industry, what would be the first things you would change?
Frankly, I wouldn't change much or existing rules, I have to say. It's a very good question because we have some solid regulatory foundation in Europe that makes us unique as a region. And yeah, that includes data protection, cybersecurity, consumer protection rules that are very strong. And I think there's not much that I would change when it comes to existing regulatory space. But if to really think of the future, I think what we currently lack in the internet policy space, specifically in the EU, is the awareness of internet stack and the importance of the domain name system for all digital activity that is adjacent to not specifically only technical fields. So that includes, for example, financial regulation or intellectual property rights protection. And these are the areas where we need more efforts in bridging the policymakers' intentions and actual technical reality of registries and registrars. And I know that it's a little bit very, you know, conceptual at the moment, so I have a little example that I prepared. So to illustrate a little bit this point, what we mean. At the moment, EU is trying to establish rules for financial data sharing between financial institutions such as banks and fintech companies. And the overall aim of that reform is to increase consumer choice within the financial market. So you might ask, where are the domains fitting in this space? And actually, it's quite a crucial part of that reform. So if a financial institution or a fintech company does not comply with those upcoming rules, then their domain name can be deleted. And these enforcement measures involving domain names are done with the aim of increased consumer protection. But the proposal does not take into consideration any adverse effects of financial customers when they would lose the access to their bank or actually to their accounts. So imagine waking up one day and you don't have access to your mobile bank, you don't have your access to your account information, and you can't even contact your bank to actually ask what's happening. So this is where we see a lack of unclarity and misunderstanding how domain names are crucial for any business, including, of course, the financial institutions, but also for customers of that business.
Do you have some challenges nowadays that the industry is facing? Can you elaborate more on that?
So the increased regulatory attention towards the domain name system and actually domain name registries and registrars continues to be a trend. So yeah, I've already established a link with financial regulation, but we actually have more of those proposals coming up. So yeah, that does not only from the financial sector, but also from intellectual property rights and agricultural policy, which is also very surprising. I think maybe one of the biggest challenges for registries and registrars in this space when we talk about increased regulatory attention is, yeah, it's a sort of intensifying compliance burden that the operators are facing. Examples from the financial regulation involve an increasing number of authorities that can approach and ask registries or registrars to do something about the domain name, but also, for example, the recent geographical indications regulations that are in the agriculture policy but actually deal with intellectual property rights protection attempted to significantly interfere with the process of domain name registration and prioritize IP rights holders during the registration process. I think the main challenge for industry in this context is to really keep track of increasingly more complex regulatory environment that not only is targeting domain name registries and registrars from the typical tech space, but also outside of that tech environment. So that is really quite a challenge to keep up with that. And we will only see that trend intensifying, unfortunately.
How are the European internet policies evolving in the light of the increasing concerns around digital sovereignty and data protection?
So the ideas of European tech or digital sovereignty are actually not new, but they have definitely gained a new traction within the current geopolitical tensions and specifically between EU and US relationship. And when we talk about other regions or other countries like China, for example, that technical or technological influence has already been on policymakers' agenda for some time. So, and that specifically was quite prominent in phasing out Chinese tech companies from spectrum and connectivity projects across EU member states. But when it comes to concrete legislative proposals that we might see coming in the digital sovereignty space in Europe. Unfortunately, at the moment, I cannot say because we would have to see how they will materialize. There's a lot of talk, there's a lot of discussion at the moment, but there's nothing tangible that's coming our ways yet. So, European Commission is obviously very much, you know, looking into the space and trying to understand how these gaps can be bridged and more European presence within technology can be promoted. But the situation is different also depending on the member states. So we see, for example, in some member states, there are already some efforts into trying to migrate specifically the e-government services away from non-EU cloud environments, and also some initiatives to see if there is a way to invest more into free and open source software. So that's we see already happening at the member state level. But on the concrete legislative requirements, nothing yet. Most likely by the end of the year, we'll see some concrete proposals from the European Commission.
What impact do you foresee for the Digital Service Act and like other upcoming regulations having domain registries and registrars in Europe?
The Digital Services Act, or the DSA, to just make it a little bit short. So the DSA itself actually has a limited impact on domain registries and registrars, which is good for a change, because the number and the complexity of obligations coming from DSA and that are applicable to different digital services depends on the proximity of the digital services to the illegal content that the DSA aims to tackle. So for registries, if we talk about obligations that might come to them, there's a limited set of obligations that registries need to comply under DSA. So that includes clarity of terms of service, which is a no-brainer, but also transparency reporting, for example, that might include more of regulatory compliance efforts. And registries are also obliged to act upon orders from competent authorities to act against illegal content. And for registrars, it's also very similar, but registrars have to be mindful that if they also offer other services like hosting or cloud or any other adjacent services on top of the domain name, then the regulatory compliance becomes more complex, because then they have to comply with the minimum set, but also additional obligations, such as notice and action procedure, when they have to act upon notifications from anybody, actually, and look into what's happening and what type of content is problematic. But I think, of course, I cannot not mention the most relevant regulation for DNS that actually has an impact on the core business of registries and registrars, and that is NIS2 directive and its ongoing national transposition. So the verification and the data accuracy obligation that it imposes continues to be a challenge, and we still don't have a harmonized or even a uniform transposition across member states. Yeah, and that's one of the most challenging aspects of that directive on registries and registrars, because it also interferes with the global DNS policies, and it's a really unprecedented attention towards a very specific core issue that registries and registrars have to deal with. So unfortunately, we still have no clarity on that, but it's an ongoing process.
We understand that for registrars and registries, adapting to this emerging digital sovereignty policy and balancing compliance with operational efficiency is the task. What advice would you give to this organization to navigate this complex, evolving terrain?
Yeah, so I think this is really a million euro question, really. And it's a very complex area, of course, to navigate. But I think I have some, very short advice, and hopefully that is helpful for the operators trying to navigate this very complex environment. So I think first, it's important for the domain name industry to try to engage in policy and legislative discussions before the legislation is in place. And of course, that's very difficult, and it depends on the capabilities and the size of an operator, and it's difficult to really navigate. But most importantly, you have to raise awareness. Yeah, you need to, first of all, of course, stay in track with what's happening, but also make sure that your voice is heard before the legislation is finalized. Meet your national politician, try to meet your local politician, trying to raise awareness about what's coming, but also engage with industry associations, regional organizations such as Center. We're very much welcome input from different corners of the industry. So please engage with us, and find like-minded partners to build coalitions so that you're able to influence to some extent the legislation before it's finalized. But of course, that's quite a hard job already. So most of the time, once the legislation is already there, you just have to really start building your compliance. So first, really assess the compliance capabilities and risks stemming from different legislation. So not every legislation is equally applicable to all operators or all services that are in your sphere. So, and there's always a nuance. You might be also exempt, for example, based on your size. So you really need to make the assessment which legislation is relevant for your business. And then once you have that, exchange also best practices, again, with the like-minded partners that you created before legislation was put in place. And another advice I would say, that since cyber cybersecurity is a huge topic still and also on legislative agenda, and we saw it from NIS2, but there's also other initiatives. So my advice to really to any tech business is to invest in your security. Most cybersecurity legislation follows some well-known international standards. So if you have certification, for example, under ISO information security standards, it will most likely help also with the regulatory compliance. So invest into security, invest into securing your processes. And finally, my last point or last piece of advice, to build relationships with your supervisory competent public authorities, because they are the ones that most likely, you know, will come to you if there is a problem. But also they need to understand how registrars work. And yeah, it also helps you to raise awareness of your work and also of criticality of domain names for information society. So in the end, in the long run, it will also help with compliance efforts.
Paulina, thank you so much for your insightful perspective today at the InternetX Domain Summit.
Thank you so much for having me.
When it comes to internet security, TSL or SSL certificates are essential. We welcome our guest Stephen Nyhan, Director Global Sales Engineering from Sectico, one of the largest private authorities for certificate management solutions and SSL certificates. Hi, Stephen.
Thank you, Thilo. And it's great to be here at the Domain Summit together with Simone. This is my second time attending your event, and it's a very interesting event. Lots of great guests and talks. It's fantastic to be here.
Would you enter your personal data, such as credit card information, on a website that does not have SSL encryption?
Yeah, absolutely not. No. I mean, I don't think anybody should. SSL encryption would be a bare minimum that anybody should use for securing data in transit. If a website is not secured via SSL, it would be extremely dangerous to enter any credit card details, passwords, anything like that. It would almost be like you're just sending a postcard in the post in clear text. Anybody can pick it up and read it. That would be a dangerous thing to do.
What do you see as the biggest security threat facing the domain industry today? Have this threat changed in the recent years?
The threat landscape, it does evolve from time to time, but some of the things that customers face and providers face are persistent. So phishing has always been a problem and remains a problem. Brand impersonation as well is a big issue. There are also then more technical attacks, DNS hijacking, cache poisoning. And what we see related to Sectico's business, there is also the potential for abuse of subdomains and wildcard certificates. So that's something that customers need to be aware of and try to get certificates from a reputable certificate authority. There are other threats that involve social conditioning, manipulation of the person to get them to click on links and that they shouldn't be able to do. But I think on the whole, malicious actors are looking for the weakest link to get you to trick customers into giving up their details, allowing the hackers into the environment that they shouldn't be in.
What role do SSL certificates play in securing domains?
There are a number of different things that an SSL certificate can help you with. It can help to authenticate the identity of a website. So that can be just at the level of the domain, proving that you have control over the domain. You do have higher level certificates as well, EV and OV certificates that also authenticate the identity of the organization. That helps to build trust with the end user. So the end user knows that they are talking to a domain that is controlled by an owner, or at least is controlled by the person who has the SSL certificate. The other thing then that it does is once that has been established, you encrypt the data in transit. So that is the main function of the SSL certificate. So it's ensuring that you are connecting to a website that is controlled by the person who says that they have control over it, and that once that has been established, that the communication is secure.
You already talked about phishing and malware and how effective are modern SSL certificates against phishing. Phishing sites can also be encrypted with a certificate. So how does Sectico manage to build trust for their certificates that something like this won't happen?
Yeah, so an SSL certificate does not guarantee you against phishing, right? Any person can get an SSL certificate. As long as they have control over the domain and can prove that they have control over the domain, they can get a certificate for that domain. So one issue then is further downstream is ensuring that bad actors do not have access to that domain. But once they do, the SSL certificate is not going to prevent phishing on its own, at least a TLS. An ordinary DV cert is not going to protect you necessarily against phishing. Now, there are other types of certificates, EV certificates and OV certificates, organization validated and extended validation, that do verify verify the identity of the person owning the certificate. That can go some way towards helping to suppress or minimize phishing.
Sectico is IONOS trusted SSL certificate partner, or for the whole IONOS group. What do you see as the benefits of this collaboration, both for the end customers and for the secure ecosystem as a whole?
Yes, absolutely. We're delighted to have become the exclusive SSL provider for, or certificate provider for IONOS. We've partnered with IONOS for the last 13 years in web security space, so you have a very large customer base using our SiteLock product. But in the SSL agreement that we have now, your customers can benefit from a seamless integration across all of our certificate products. So not just TLS, but also S/MIME, which encrypts emails, and code signing, document signing, and we will be together launching eIDAS and VMC shortly, and all at very competitive pricing. The other thing then that your customers can really benefit from is certificate lifecycle management. So having a way of automatically updating and replacing the certificates will help to mitigate and empower your customers to be protected when lifespans of certificates come down, and also when the threat of quantum computing breaking the existing algorithms appears. If you are certificate agile, you will then be quantum agile and can, just as soon as post-quantum certificates are available, your customers will be able to update to those almost instantly.
Are there emerging technologies like quantum computing that organizations should be aware of when it comes to domain security?
Yes, I mean, being post-quantum ready is going to be very important. NIST, the American Standard Organization, will distrust the most common encryption algorithms, RSA and ECC, by 2030. So that's in anticipation that quantum computing presents a high enough risk that by 2030, that customers' data in transit will be at risk. But even today, we need to be aware that that data can be hoovered up, it can be downloaded, it can be saved and stored while waiting for the future quantum apocalypse. So you can harvest the data now and decrypt later as well. So it's already a risk today. But it's not the only thing that is an issue. I mean, DNSSEC is not implemented as much as it could. This can go a long way towards providing better security. And as I said before, automating the certificate lifecycle management will help enormously as well.
How can collaborations within the domain industry help enhance security measures and mitigate DNS abuse more effectively?
Yeah, I think the key here is collaboration between different industry partners, different standards bodies, sharing threat intelligence, unifying standards for abuse reporting and mitigation, participating in joint efforts at taking down malicious actors, and increasing education and awareness across the industry. There's no silver bullet. There's no single thing that you can do. You're never going to stop cybercrime altogether. It's a constant arms race. And by all of the good guys acting together in the interests of the industry, but also in the interests of our customers and our society as a whole, we can help to dampen down the amount of criminal activity that there is.
Thank you very much for talking to us.
Yeah, thank you. It's great to join your podcast. It's wonderful to have been here. And of course, to all of your listeners, please give our Root Causes podcast, Sectigo's Root Causes podcast, a listen for all things PKI.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We welcome Abe Story, founder and CEO of Entry, a startup that offers domain APIs. The Entry solution helps to improve user activation, increase retention, and drive incremental value for the users. Welcome to the podcast, Abe. What was the initial idea behind founding Entry?
Yeah, so you know, today Entry has a full suite of products and APIs and services, but our first product and really our flagship product is Entry Connect. And the idea for Entry Connect came when I was helping a friend fix a problem with their DNS. I'm a pretty technical person, and I thought to myself, if I don't enjoy updating DNS or fixing it, then I can't imagine my mom trying to do it if she wanted to set up her own website or set up her own email campaign. And I thought to myself, there must be a better way. We're in a modern era. We're sending things into space. There must be a way to make DNS easier for the everyday person. And that was the impetus behind Entry.
So we can say that Entry helps platforms provide domains directly to their customers. How exactly does that work?
So we do two things for our platform partners. One is through Entry Connect. We make it really easy for them to onboard new users. So if you're a point of sale company or CRM or website builder, a lot of your customers, they might already own a domain. Maybe they bought the domain on Ionos, or they bought the domain on Porkbun, and maybe they don't even remember where they bought it. With Entry installed on that point of sale platform or on a SaaS platform, we automatically detect where the domain originated from, where the DNS is managed, and we make it one click for the user to integrate that domain with that SaaS company. So for the platform or the SaaS company, it increases, right, their ability to onboard users. We also have a product called Entry Sell, which is to make it easy for people who don't already own a domain and need to purchase a domain and have it configured with the SaaS platform.
What is a specific advantage on the SaaS platform?
So for the SaaS platforms using Entry, and frankly, I would say for any SaaS platform that incorporates domains into their application, they're going to have a higher retention rate, a stickier customer. They're going to be able to onboard customers faster, and they're going to establish more trust as well with both their customer and the user. You know, for example, if you receive a text maybe from an appointment software that says, oh, reminder, please confirm your haircut appointment. If that link says randomlink123.com or .xyz, you're probably going to think, huh, maybe this is phishing or some scam. But if this link has a custom domain, like confirm.myappointmentsolution.com, you're building trust with the user.
Could you share a real life example or some best practice that highlight the difference Entry makes?
You know, one way to think about the before and after with Entry, the before would be the user of the platform is sent to a support desk and has like 15 different articles. One article maybe for every domain registrar on with instructions on how to set up the domain. With Entry, that goes away and it becomes a cohesive, seamless experience.
How does the partnership between Ionos and Entry look like, or the Ionos group and Entry look like? Yeah.
We really value our partnership with Ionos and with many of our registrar partners. I think there's two primary ways we partner with Ionos. The first is making it easy for all of the Ionos customers to set up their domain with the hundreds of platforms that also partner with Entry, so providing value to their users who want to set up a domain with many applications. I think also for Ionos and for any domain registrar, a domain that is actually used and actually activated with a service, that's a more valuable domain. It's a more valuable customer. And so as a result, the retention rates, the engagement rates for the registrar like Ionos are higher.
What is your vision for the future of domain management? So what do you see? Can you tell us maybe something about the next step that you have planned with Entry?
I think overall, our vision and how we see the future is just continuing to try to simplify things. I think that's the ethos that's guided our product from the beginning, and I think we'll continue to do that.
Thank you very much for talking to us, and have a nice day here at the InternetX Domain Summit.
Thank you. You as well.
Thank you for tuning in. Today we cover a number of exciting topics in the domain industry, highlighting the innovations and advancements driving this space forward. If you're eager to dive deeper into domains, be sure to visit internetx.com, the domain specialist at Ionos Group.
And of course, at www.ionos.de/domains, you'll find everything you need about domains. I hope you join us again next time. If you enjoyed the podcast, please leave a comment with your suggestions for improvements and topics you'd like to hear about. You can do this directly below the podcast or via our social media channels. Thank you for listening. Bye, and until next time.